much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Good morning, 8:09 here on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and of course, every Wednesday leading up to the 200th anniversary in July this year of Escambia County, we are talking with the various authors of these that are running also in the Pensacola News Journal every week about the history of Pensacola and Escambia County. Catherine B. Parker is a faunal analyst and foodways researcher at the University of West Florida's Archaeology Institute, and she joins us now. Catherine, welcome to the Pensacola Morning News.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, now I have to ask before we do anything else. A faunal analyst. I am assuming this is animals because flora is vegetables and plants and fawn is flora and fauna is animals. So I assume you're some kind of an animal researcher of some kind?
Actually, I just researched their bones. A faunal analyst identifies and analyzes animal remains, other than human, found on archaeological sites. And this lets me know what they were eating.
Huh.
Now, you can tell people that you eat certain things, but your garbage never lies.
Lies. I love that. Okay, so... Go ahead. Your article is all about the food of Escambia County 200 years ago, some before that as well. There's a lot of history in this.
Yes.
But
yes,
it's a fascinating history.
You have to know how the food develops.
Right. So what, from your point of view, just kind of, you know, beginning points, what's the most interesting thing about the food of Escambia County over its history and especially around 200 years ago?
Well, it was such a diverse group of people who came to Pensacola in the territorial and early state period. Many of them did not know how to prepare the foods of the area. They did not have the same foods they might have had in their home country or their home state further north. But everyone cooperated and told people, you know, this might grow here, or this animal is good to eat. And they exchanged information and exchanged ways of preparation. And that's why we have this absolutely fabulous food in Pensacola today.
Huh.
Because it's based on so many other things besides seafood. It's based on the country the cook came from or the cultural background. And they just all tasted each other's food and thought, oh, this is cool. I'm going to make this at home.
So Pensacola
and,
is really the melting pot. I mean, Pensacola is the place where everybody came. And I never would have thought of that, that the, you know, the indigenous plants, herbs, seasonings, the indigenous animals would not be what they had in Spain or in France or in Britain or in Pennsylvania. And so they've got to learn how
right.
to adapt to this new stuff and the resources that, you know, we take for granted you can buy anything all the time. Obviously, that was not true back then. So it was like a giant recipe swap meet.
Exactly. It was. And if someone tasted a food they liked, they tried to find out what it was and how it was prepared.
Huh.
And we were so lucky in Pensacola at the time because the French Revolution had happened. And who was associated with the aristocracy? Why, all the chefs and the culinary workers. So they left France as fast as they could get out of there because, you know, their life might not have been worth too much.
So we have French cuisine in America largely and in Pensacola largely because after the French Revolution, all of the highly skilled cooks, chefs came here.
That's right. They tried to come. They went all over the world.
Yeah.
But in the Americas, they tried to come to a French colony because they knew they'd be appreciated there.
That makes sense. Okay.
And they would be out of danger of the proletariat, so to speak, in France. And they would have a great job. And it about that same time, it was a real coup for a family to say they had a French chef in their kitchen.
Sure. Wow. See, I just think of things like mixing, you know, Creole and that, I mean, you know, and seafood and all that. I never would have thought about this except for your article writes about it. Even and this may be a small thing, but I thought it was fascinating. The you mentioned about the nature of having a garden district, of having the place away from your home where you would grow, you know, your herb garden basically for your flavorings.
Right.
That was a key part of the flavor profile and having the variety of foods. Is that right?
That's right. And the British really started that. You know, the British are big gardeners. Everybody wants to have their own little garden, whether it's flowers or food plants. And so when the British came to Pensacola, they were really big on gardens, and the commander of the British forces in Pensacola thought, I've got to find something for my guys to do. We're not fighting a war, so, hey, we're going to have gardens. And he had them make gardens within the fort, even.
Huh.
But I mean, then they came up with everybody who buys a plot in town can get, if they want it, a garden plot just north of town. Well, that just north of town garden plot is now Garden Street in Pensacola today.
I mean, see, I feel so dumb for not knowing that, but that's such an because you know what I think of as Pensacola is such an expansive land area, but of course, you know, town was really just that little tiny stretch right down by the water originally.
Oh, yeah.
So garden was quite a ways
right.
away at the time, and that's why you have that's fascinating. And then I just want to promote to
right.
people, if they want to read your article, it's fascinating. All of the history of food, the history of the different cultures, the different time periods that contributed to the flavors of Pensacola. And this may be a silly thing, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but was there any, because I don't think it was in the article, was there any sharing, like, I would think of as restaurants, but like, would there be a bar or a pub that people would go to that they would encounter some of these different things? Did that cross-cultural sharing happen somehow?
Oh, yes. Yes, by word of mouth, by experience, by the people who were food sellers that walked around the streets of Pensacola selling their wares. And the Tivoli House was a great mover and shaker in the fashion of food in Pensacola. And people tasted French-type food at the Tivoli House. And it was open to the public. It was open to anyone who knew how to behave in public, who had nice clean clothes, who liked to dance, who liked to gamble, and who loved to eat. And they would come to the Tivoli House.
I love it.
Taverns were very important, especially at that time in Pensacola, because there were a lot of travelers coming through.
Right.
And many of them were single men who had no way to cook their own food unless they lived in a boarding house and could pay for bed and board, so to speak. But taverns always kept something on the stove.
That's just, that so, is, Catherine, this is so fascinating. And I'm thinking about, like, you know, the history of Pensacola and Escambia County began with food, began with drinking, began with gambling, began with just fun. I mean, all of the things that we do today trace their lineage back 200. It's fascinating. Catherine Parker is a faunal analyst. That means that she analyzes animal bones archaeologically. She is a foodways researcher at the University of West Florida's Archaeology Institute. Catherine, thank you for the time. Thank you for the interesting insights. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.